Love has a way of inserting itself in all the wrong places. Sometimes it can even shake your faith. It was 1967, and Father Bob McClory was the associate pastor at the St. Sabina Parish on Chicago's South Side. These were tumultuous times for the parish. Blacks were moving in, whites were moving out. Father McClory oversaw St. Sabina's school, and he learned that the school had been assigned a new principal, a 35-year-old Dominican nun, Sister Margaret McComish. Father McClory was incensed. What would a nun from rural Wisconsin know about running an urban school?
I recall an evening school board meeting, and we said, we can't have this. So I was authorized to send a telegram and beg them, please don't send the sister, because this is a delicate situation and we need to keep the one who knows what to do. They didn't write back. They just sent Margaret.
I was called to the mother house and told that I would be assigned to St. Sabina's in Chicago. I was arguing that I was not able or ready to do this. And they said, oh, don't worry. There's a wonderful young priest there, and he will be of great help to you, Father McClory.
My only reaction to meeting her the first time, the pastor was interviewing her, and I walked into the room, and I thought, she looks like somebody I could work with.
I guess I always thought, he'll do his job, I'll do my job, and as long as he stays out of my way, everything will be fine.
But the situation was such that she was new to this incredible upheaval that was going on in the school and in the parish, so it was necessary that I, who was the local priest in charge of the school at that point, I had to, you know, explain things to her.
I can remember times when I was taking knives away from kids in school and then calling him and saying, get over here. What are we going to do with this? Another time, a woman called me up. She was very angry with something I had done at school, and she told me she was going to call the Urban League on me. I had no idea what the Urban League was. So then again, I'm on the phone with Bob saying, with Father McClory, excuse me, saying, what do we do next? I guess I picked up his enthusiasm for the parish and for the people. And he was so dedicated to these families. He was out visiting them in their homes. He was teaching them. He knew everybody by name.
She was just very, very sensitive to the people and kind. I had already been struck that she was really a beautiful person, but I would say more by her personality was beautiful, and I wasn't, you know, measuring beauty in those terms at that time.
When I arrived there, we were wearing the Dominican habit, which was a long white to the floor gown and a black veil and a white headdress that covered everything except your eyes and your nose, practically.
Catholic kids used to kind of joke that there were three genders of human beings. There was men and women and nuns. All you could see was just the features of their face, and not much of that either, because they were covered by cloth.
After I had been there a couple of years, Bob took an assignment to go to Europe for a couple of weeks. And I remember writing to him there in Europe and just going on and on about all the stuff that was happening at the school. And then I remember waiting to hear back and how excited I was to hear from him. And I thought,
I was over in Holland, and the Air Force chaplain was driving me around, and we were looking at the beauties of Holland. And I was thinking, you know, wouldn't it be great if Sister Margaret was here to enjoy this too? Now, you know, in the past, when you go on a vacation or you go someplace, you don't say, I wish a sister was with me. And then we exchanged letters over there, and I just remember reading her letter with trembling hand. The years here, 67 through 1970, were years of great change in the church. A lot of priests were affected by that, and I certainly was, so that my close-knit dedication to everything the church said had been shaken and diminished. The Second Vatican Council had removed a lot of the eternity to rules and regulations. People were thinking about a lot of different ways of looking at religion and looking at relationships. So all of that was part of the mix. I remember talking about other priests. We were absolutely convinced that priests would be allowed to get married within, oh, 4 or 5 years. At that time, it seemed just obvious.
I hadn't been at Sabina's for more than a week, and this young man came to the door and introduced himself, and he was the Reverend Bob Keller, who was the pastor of the Methodist church down the street. And he came in, he just wanted to introduce himself, he wanted to welcome me to the area. And what we found out, and we got to know them very well, is that Bob and Rosemary Keller were married, had 2 children, they lived down the street, and you couldn't help but notice that they were doing the same kinds of things in the community that we were doing, and they were married and had children. And I had never worked with another married couple who were dedicated to religion, and it just started things in the back of your mind that things could be different.
My dad was very sick. He was in the hospital for 3 months, and, you know, I used to talk to Margaret about it, and I remember one Sunday he was really getting sick, and there was thought that he was going to die. And I was just really down, and she was attending a conference up in Lake Forest.
And I called him a couple of times while I was up there just to see how things were.
She called, or I called, to tell her how he was, and I said, just on the spur of the moment, why don't I just come up and maybe we could get a sandwich or something and talk about this.
I thought, great, you know, we'll have dinner, and I didn't think a lot about it. But then I found myself getting very nervous as the time came that he was coming, and I was like, what am I doing and what's going on here?
So I drove up and picked her up at Lake Forest, and we drove around, found a little restaurant called the Saratoga. First time we ever sat down, just the two of us.
We went to dinner, had a wonderful talk, and
almost everything that was said just reverberated in my skull. And I just remember that was a very, very vivid meal. Like the Last Supper. I mean, it was absolutely overwhelming.
It was the point where we began to feel that we were moving in a new direction.
We went to visit a former sister, and we were driving back after talking to her.
We had just come back from visiting a friend of mine who I had entered the community with. And she had left the community, and that was very hard on me because she and I had been very close, and it was like, wait a minute, what is she doing, and why am I still here? And then on the way home, we stopped at a stoplight.
And I said, I think I cleared my throat, and I said, you know, I think I'm falling in love with you. And there was dead silence. Just dead silence.
That, oh my God, what have we gotten ourselves into?
There was a lot of talk about relationships, men with women, in those days. There was a book written about the third way, and that was that the first way was celibacy, you don't get married. The second way is marriage. Then there was talk about a third way, that men and women could have beautiful celibate relationships and work together.
We knew that something was happening, and we also knew that we were both totally dedicated to what we were doing. And this third way was sort of a way out.
I always used to listen to rock and roll songs on the radio ever since I had been ordained, just, you know, to be aware of what the kids were listening to. But then suddenly I'm listening to the lyrics and thinking, yeah, isn't that beautiful? I mean, these corny rock lyrics were speaking to me. One that really hit me, it's a song I know has been nominated as one of the worst songs of all time.
Carpus Park is melting in the dark, all the sweet green icing flowing down.
It was something about...
I had no idea what it was all about. You know, the cake out in the rain.
And it took so long to bake it.
Think that I can take it, 'cause it took so long to bake it.
And I'll never have that recipe again. I thought, wow, that's really profound. I found it very moving.
And that stuck with us, that this was a time that we might not ever have again.
And at that point, it was very clear that that's the way it could go. What really triggered it for both of us was around 1969, I got a call from the priest's board of appointment, and they said, would you consider taking a position at such and such a parish?
I remember him calling me and saying that they were thinking of changing him to another parish, and I remember very clearly my heart just sinking, because I just could not imagine working there without him being there.
I think we both started to think, we got something here that's very, very precious, and are we willing to just say, let it go? You're concerned about moving away from a commitment that I made very seriously 13 or 14 years before that. What are my parents going to say? What is my former pastor going to say?
It was very difficult to leave this institution that had taken care of me for all these years. At that time, a lot of sisters were leaving and were marrying priests, and it was scandalous. My father, when I told him I was leaving the community, he said, well, that's fine, but just don't marry a priest.
You know, it was absolutely terrifying, but it seemed to me like the terror was muted by this kind of soft light that I felt like surrounded me. The light was Margaret.
And I remember one priest I talked with, and he said, you've got to listen to this. This is God speaking to you in a whole new way, and you can't just walk away from it. And that was very freeing for me, because I was struggling to walk away from it, and I knew I couldn't.
I felt it would be wrong. I mean, I really came to the conclusion it would be wrong to just let this go in the name of the commitment that I had made. Therefore, you know, I did everything possible to seek to be relieved of that commitment, because I simply thought to just pass this off would be an evil thing to do.
When I told the sisters in the community that I was leaving, I decided it would be very proper of me to go and visit my elderly cousin, who was a Dominican out in River Forest. So I gathered up all my courage to tell her about Bob, and I got there, and she was very much into talking about herself and her problems, and so I didn't tell her. So I went home and I wrote her a letter. And she wrote back and said, well, I hope you have better luck keeping your second set of vows than you did your first. I was devastated.
In order to leave and in order to get permission to be dispensed from your priestly obligations, you have to see the cardinal, Cardinal John Cody at that time. So with great fear and trembling, I made an appointment and went down to his house to see him. And I remember he sat me down. He was very cordial, and he said, well, I suppose this is bad news. And I said, well, I have considered this and thought about it and prayed about it, and I am convinced at this point that I need to leave the priesthood. And at that point, as I recall, he said something like, well, I suppose you're planning to get married then, too. And I said, well, that's, you know, quite likely. And he didn't show much reaction. And he said, now, you're at St. Sabine, aren't you? And I said, yes. And he said, how are the collections going there? And I said, I really wasn't paying a lot of attention to the collections. And he said, I think the collections are really up. Give me a minute. So he goes in the other room and comes back with the official report on collections. And he said, yeah, definitely they're up. I'm really impressed with that. And he talked in this vein for a while. And then he said, well, I suppose if you're leaving, then you'll be leaving. And he helped me on with my overcoat, and I left. He said, good luck. And I thanked him.
I was working for the Catholic school office, and I had told Father Clark, who was my boss, that I was leaving, and I was going to marry Bob McClory. A few days later, Cardinal Cody was in the office, and Father Clark told me later that he was going down the aisle looking into the cubicle saying, which one is she?
If we could have gotten married and still retained our old positions, I imagine we would have.
No, in no way would I have thought that leaving the religious community was leaving my faith. And that's one of the reasons we went through all the proper channels to get all the permissions that we needed to do this. It's been very important to us. We're still both very involved in church affairs.
And people have said to me, you know, when did you decide to leave the church? And I always said, I never left the church. And they said, well, of course you did. You were a priest and you left. And I said, when a person resigns from the army, he does not cease to be an American. I was still a Catholic, still believed in the things of the Catholic Church, but I was moving out of the army, so to speak, out of the priesthood. And I have no sense of having dropped out of Catholicism or out of Christianity. I don't know, this may be understood the wrong way. You know, all those years when I was working in the priesthood, I felt I never really knew what loneliness was until I met Margaret. And by that, I meant that I never knew I was lonely. I was involved in all this stuff going on, but there's always a kind of an ache, sort of a pain in the pit of your soul, that I never interpreted that as loneliness. I just thought all people felt that way. All of a sudden, it's gone. It's just gone. The fulfillment of that love was just overwhelming.
Bob and Margaret McClory will celebrate their 32nd wedding anniversary this fall.